We welcome you back to the Poorhouse. It's a Coors Light Frost Brewed Friday on a Thursday. We're going to lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Kind of an odd week. Oregon plays tomorrow, but we've still managed to find some time because it's time to get our view from the north. His resume is now reaching a new level of efficiency. He's getting it done for the Atlantic. He will be Cleveland bound. You can follow along on Twitter. The handle is at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how you doing today?
Wait, I got a new job with the Atlantic?
What'd I say? The Athletic? Yeah, the Atlantic, the Athletic. I have been confusing that between you and Tyson and these guys and some other guys I know that left papers. You're killing me.
All right.
By the way, Aaron Fentress of the Athletic joins us. Better now?
I wasn't even. I was like, ooh, Atlantic's kind of a cool place, isn't it?
I would assume so. It's better than the unemployment line, but we're good.
Politics, though, they do do sports, I think, as well.
Right.
I don't know. How are you doing?
Last night, you tweeted something about the Dodgers that I thought was really important because as a Cubs fan, it's an interesting angle. I mean, we know LA's been to two straight World Series, won 106 games. They're out. But I've always said this about a fan base. You know, winning one title is not one more than none. It's like infinity more. So it's like for Cubs fans complaining, it's like, dude, you just won. It's a really big difference, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I don't like the mentality of we should win it all the time. We're the greatest, blah, blah, blah. I hate that. And there have been some dynasties. We've seen it. New England Patriots fans are spoiled. You know, the Celtics have had their moments. Obviously, the Lakers, the Bulls. My Bulls, I had my time with the Sun as a fan where they won six titles in 8 years, which is still just stupid. But you can't expect that. And I think sometimes people just expect once you win one, you're supposed to win more. And it just doesn't work that way. Everyone should know better than that. And so this whole time, the last 3 years, when you know, in Cubland, it's like, oh, are we going to get back? What's going on? How come we're not this? How come we're not that? The whole time I'm like looking around going, yeah, but we're not the Dodgers. Yeah, but we're not the Dodgers. Now, this year, it looked like the Dodgers had by far the best team and that they were going to go to the World Series and probably win it. And they just lost to the Nationals. So now you're looking at a squad that's been to the World Series, been to the NLCS, and now just lost in the divisional round in their best season of the run, really. And so if you're a Cubs fan, you know, you won 100 whatever years without a World Series title, and I'm one of those fans, and then you're crying that they haven't gotten a second one. Well, at least we're not sitting here like the Dodgers going, what the hell is going on? We got Clayton Kershaw, an all-time great pitcher. You have Cody Bellinger, who's going to be MVP this year. You have all that other talent, and they have not won one. And not only that, you just lost to a Nationals team that let their best player, Bryce Harper, walk. Oh, that's got to stink.
Yeah, hey, you know, you're preaching to a Yankees fan who's had a day in the sun, and I ain't that spoiled. all right, now that we've shared our joy over the Dodgers' misery, you were at Oregon-Cal. And, you know, we used to watch the Ducks score 50 points without blinking. And so, you know, you see them winning conference 17-7, 21-6. And you asked the legit question of the fans. And I like the fact you offered three options. In emoji language, what are Oregon fans thinking about where they're at now? One was a facepalm. One was more of a quizzical look. And one was a smiling face with sunglasses. So you got a lot of responses. What are the fans thinking about this team right now?
If I remember correctly, most of them were, well, I should say, I felt like it was kind of split between okay with that as long as they're winning, but I'm not sure I'm down with this. Because I think there's a little shock to the system if you're a Duck fan, because especially the new age Duck fans, I think the old school Duck fan, a win's a win. I think the new age Duck fan, the last 10 years, they're like, we're Duck fans because of how the offense was and how they went up and down the field and score all these points. So is this as sexy? Is this as entertaining? I think they're going to be the ones who are probably going to be negative about it. But at the end of the day, the goal is to win, and they're winning. And if they can win the Pac-12 by averaging 27 points in conference and only giving up 12, then hey, you know, you still won the conference. But I think that the only reason why you would really be concerned about the offense is that you kind of know that at some point you're going to need the offense to win a game for you. You haven't had to have them do that yet, but it's going to happen. Is it going to turn itself around? I think tomorrow they will turn it around because they're playing against a defense that's not very good. And I think tomorrow they have to turn it around because I do think Oregon's offense, Oregon's defense is not necessarily going to get exposed, but I do see this team putting up, you know, somewhere in the mid-20s in terms of points.
Yeah, we were talking with Chad Brown yesterday, and he's like, you know, I love the coach. I love the direction of the offense, but the defense hasn't given up less than 30 in a game. But
I know.
As far what?
No, I'm saying, I know. It's crazy. Like, I think twice they give up 31 and then 30 twice or something like that and 35. It's like they're right between 30 and 35 all five games. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, it's really, it's oddly inconsistent in its consistency.
Right.
you know, your post-game report included the comment that, you know, talking about the offense right now is going to cost them unless they don't jack it up. You know, it appeared the ground game got going, but there were turnovers. The three receivers returned, and we know the point totals are subpar. So in looking at this offense right now, what is concerning you?
You know, you're right. They did get the running game going against a good defense. That was a good sign, but they did have the turnovers. Clearly, in that game, you would say, well, they moved the ball pretty well. They just couldn't finish. But you have to give Cal credit for helping to create those turnovers. They did a good job on the pick, and they did a good job on one of the fumbles. The other one died, just kind of lost on his own, I felt like. But part of being a good offense is not turning the ball over, and it's not committing penalties that hurt you on your drives. If Cal killed themselves with penalties in that game, my God, they had so many first and 20s from holdings or first and 15s from false starts. It was crazy, especially in the second half. So those things work both ways. I just think they're just wildly inconsistent. They're not really good at anything. Therefore, there's nothing they can hang their hat on. That's one thing if you can't run well, but you're slinging it all over the place. Or you have trouble passing it, but you're running all over people. They're not doing either. And then, of course, you know, penalties pop up and turnovers pop up. I thought it was funny, though, that everyone thought these receivers coming back were going to change everything. It's like, okay, you got two receivers who've never caught a pass for Oregon, and you had one receiver that pretty much most people did not want to see start again in school. I mean, let's be honest. I thought, though, as a senior, he should be able to turn the corner and have a better year. So I kind of had high hopes for him. But the idea that a guy who had 200 yards last year and two guys that never caught a pass for Oregon were going to turn everything around, I thought were kind of reaching. So anyway, we'll see tomorrow night because they're going to play a pretty weak defense. They should have success. If they don't, then you really have to wonder what's going to happen. And I do feel at some point that offense is going to have to score 35-plus to win a game. There's some good offenses coming up that are going to put up some numbers on the Ducks.
We're talking with Aaron Fentress, now of The Athletic. During the conversation, he went to work for The Atlantic, then made it back to The Athletic.
They got rid of you right away, man. It was like, dude, you suck.
They were like, we can't take you leaving anymore. We're going to match what The Atlantic had to offer. let's get to the NFL. You're making the trip to Cleveland for Seahawks-Browns. But you told me you've been to Cleveland, and you did the double dip, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Hall of Fame in Canton. I visited Cooperstown about 25 years ago. I spent 2 days. So how did you rate the Football Hall of Fame on the Fentress bucket list?
You know, I was a little disappointed. I think because I had built it up to be something more than it was. I thought it was going to be just this monstrous museum with all these cool things. Instead, it was kind of like a decent-sized museum with some cool things. I don't know. I just felt like it was going to be more. I think if I went again with lesser expectations, I think I'd probably be more impressed. But I think I just had it built up so much. And then the Walter Payton, first of all, Walter Payton bust doesn't look anything like Walter Payton. That really pissed me off. I kept looking at it and looking at it. I did not see Walter Payton in it. And then they had Walter Payton's uniform on a mannequin. And the mannequin was like 5'8", a buck 40. Like, it was like... It just meant like I was like, okay, so Walter Payton played football as just a storefront mannequin for women's fall dress set or something like that. It just seems bizarre. I was like, no, get a mannequin that's life size. Get a mannequin that's 5'11", 205, and looks a little bit like Payton. Don't put his uniform on some scrawny little mannequin. So that kind of really kicked me off. As a matter of fact, I almost made an executive decision, just destroyed it and rebuilt it myself, but I thought I might get thrown out. but overall, it's cool. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say it isn't cool. I'm just saying that I built it up in the something that it couldn't live up to. Sort of like the last Seinfeld episode, right? Everyone thought it was going to be the greatest show ever. And then people bashed it when it actually wasn't all that bad. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, really cool. A lot of cool stuff in there. I thought that lived up to my expectations. Just walking through there, the complete history of rock and roll, so many great pieces from so many great eras and so many great artists. And, of course, they had a really cool run of Michael Jackson stuff in there, too, so I liked that. And it was really hard for me not to steal a Smooth Criminal outfit. You know, that was really tough. My friends had to hold me back, but and plus it was a big giant glass case I couldn't get through. But, no, but that was really cool. So, yeah, it was fun doing both of those things.
By the way, I'm one of the few Seinfeld diehards who liked the last episode because...
Dude, I loved it!
Because as the worst people in the world, they deserve to be in jail, and that's where they
exactly.
ended up.
Exactly! It was arguably the most poetic, justifiably gratifying endings ever. And I remember one of the criticisms was, well, usually in a Seinfeld episode, you have all these subplots and plots weaving and working together. I'm like, but every character that's ever been on that show was involved in the main plot. That was the whole thing. They all were going to show up at court and testify against him, which I thought was just genius. I mean, I love the last episode of Seinfeld. I think it was a perfect way to end it. I think everyone went into it thinking, here's another thing. Everyone thought for some reason, since it was going to be the last one, that it was going to be the greatest one. That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't work that way. It's not like the whole time they're writing Seinfeld, they're sitting around going, wait a minute, no, hold that joke. Let's save it for the last one. It doesn't work that way. Like, you can't expect it to be the best one. You just want to have the right ending. And, oh, my God, those four sitting in jail and then going right back to their mundane nothing chat about something stupid George brought up was just absolutely perfect. So you and I are on the same boat. I'm glad I found someone else I can share that with because no one else seems to like it.
No, it was real and it was spectacular.
100%.
Couple final thoughts for Aaron Fencher.
People
so let's get
it right now. And going, these fools are talking about Seinfeld.
Oh, on our show, believe me, that's like a 50-50 prop. Let's take a look at the Seahawks. They're 4-1. The Niners, you know, took apart Cleveland on Monday. They're unbeaten. The Rams have a couple losses, but you can't ignore them. Arizona's kind of interesting, you know, what Kyler Murray might become this year. So before the season, what did you think of the NFC West? You know, and now 5 weeks in, how tough do you think this division really is?
You know, I'm not surprised at all pretty much with where things are. I kind of figured that the 49ers would be pretty solid with Garoppolo back, although he's not lighting it up necessarily, but their defense is money. Now, they haven't played very many good teams. As a matter of fact, I think they've played all four teams. None of them made the playoffs last year, and they're all under 500. So they've had an easy road of it so far. But I didn't expect them necessarily to be 4-0, but I expect 3-1. I'm not surprised if they would have been there. The 4-0, right? And then the Rams, I kind of figured we're going to take a step back. One, because Gurley clearly isn't the same. And last year when they got out to the 8-0 start, Gurley was like looking like an MVP candidate. They're not using him as much. Maybe his knee's not 100% or what have you. So I kind of figured they would take a little bit of a step back. The Seahawks to me are what they've been the last couple of years. They are a team that's going to be in it in the end. And they have a marquee quarterback who can help pull out those games. But they are a precarious 4-1, dude. They've won games by 2-1-1. Right? So
wow.
They could very easily be 1-4. And I do think there's some close losses that are going to come down the road. I could very easily see them losing to Cleveland, which just got blown up by San Francisco because that's just how the NFL is. So those three teams are all very tight. I think it's going to be fascinating going down the stretch with those three. Either one of them could win it. I think Seattle obviously has a good chance as anyone, but I did not at all feel like that them at 4-1 or the 49ers at 4-0 make them necessarily the front runners. The Rams are still dangerous.
Well, this should be an interesting game. Always is a West Coast team going into that 10 o'clock on the East Coast time slot. Folks, he is Aaron Fentress. I finally, like he said, found a companion to talk about the last Seinfeld episode. You can follow him on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. He's doing it for The Athletic. Mr. Fentress, travel safe to the mistake by the lake, and we'll catch up next week.
All right, man. Take care.